Thank you, Greg. I am very happy to be backstage with our choreographer and artistic director of Brian Sanders Junk. Brian Sanders, it's great to meet you. What a spectacular first half.
Thank you. Thank you.
Can I ask you right off the bat, what does junk stand for? J-U-N-K in capital letters.
Well, it's in all caps, just so it's not referring to the idea of junk, but it's not an acronym. It's more of an artistic mentality that any idea is never too good to be thrown out and seen as used up. And any idea that was once old and thought of as no good anymore can always be looked at from a new perspective to give it new beauty and new life.
And how did your collaboration with the Philadelphia Orchestra come about?
Well, perhaps it was just that sort of aesthetic that fell into play here, because they were creating a version of Romeo and Juliet, which is tried and true. No idea is too old to look at once again and bring back in fresh new light. Certainly, you know, I'm known for pushing the envelope a little bit, and I think that they were looking not just to remount the same old, and try something a little bit more adventurous and new. So this is where we are.
Speaking to that, you know, Romeo and Juliet had a hard time for many years being staged after Prokofiev wrote the score. It took him very many tries, and then it finally became a standard in the classical ballet repertory, and so many great choreographers have staged this ballet, including Frederick Ashton, Kenneth MacMillan. Do you take any gems from the past, from past choreography, or do you completely wipe the slate clean and start afresh?
It was challenging for me on so many respects coming towards this work, because so many greats had done it in so many variations, as well as theatrical versions and retellings of the story itself. I really went back to the beginning, and I went back to the play itself and started there, and thought even to re-listen to the score. Prokofiev is famous for his Sasha the Duck in so many of our lives. And so he's very, has a, you know, a sense of delineative action of what's going on within the music itself. And I abandoned that, and I hope I didn't do wrong by him, but and thought, what is this, you know, where does this lead me? And what does this bring me to? And so many times I stepped outside of what the standard was, the standard ballet storytelling as it was. And I went back to the story of the play and started working on those ideas and how to tell that it's a little bit larger version and less dancing girls.
Well, I have to say, in terms of just the sheer dance of it, it must have been challenging to envision a dance where most of the stage is taken up by the orchestra.
This was so challenging but exciting at the same time, because this is what I do. You know, junk is really about taking both an idea and a space and utilizing them in a way that was unthought of before. So I came into the Kimmel Center and I sat down and I said, well, and I knew I wouldn't be on the stage, where could I be? And you'll see in the second act, we literally have people dancing in between two of the tiers of the balconies inside of the Verizon Hall. The sort of spectacular nature of the hall itself, I wanted to be part of the set. And so I'm really using that and the height. I think we've pulled out the canopies, the acoustic canopies, to a height of 65 feet. So we're really using an incredible amount of height within the space to really take up the space that was available to us.
You know, I have to say, one of the hallmarks of junk is a great sense of humor. And you are sometimes very outrageous in many of your pieces. What are the particular moments of humor that you've come to appreciate in Romeo and Juliet and Prokofiev's score?
This was challenging for me as well, because within the play itself, it doesn't become a tragedy until close to the end of the third act, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. And it's so filled with bawdy humor. And I really wanted to capture a bunch of that. I did most of that in the storytelling. As you saw in the first act, a few super titles, kind of, stretching truths, as it were, in the tradition of Shakespeare, really working with the innuendo and our reference of tool is, of course, the ballet tutu tool. I worked within that, the humor inside of the storytelling, but then I also have a very affectionate solo in the first act that you saw, where Mercutio is, he's quite the imp himself, and he really took the audience for a ride there in his bare naked tutuness.
So going from outrage and humor and being in the Fringe Festival, very important part of that here in Philadelphia, how do you go from that to the deep tragedy in this story that seems actually very timeless right now?
Well, I certainly, within my own storytelling, have explored many a tragedy. I tend to work closer to home. Certainly, the ideas of loss and love and family and feud are all transcending to everyone. They really speak to everyone. So I had no problem shifting into what I'm going to say, someone else's story, and really finding my own emotion and storytelling inside of that.
And the dancers, I have to say, are so incredibly expressive.
They are spectacular, and there's still more to come. And the emotion and grace and beauty that they bring to this on top of the orchestra, it's just breathtaking.
Thank you so much, Brian Sanders. It was wonderful speaking with you, and good luck with everything, and can't wait to see the second half.
Thank you so much. It was a joy to talk to you.